Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You're listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Russ, K5TUX, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
Well, hello everybody and welcome. You have tuned in to episode number 254 of Linux in the Ham Shack, which I realize now I put totally wrong episode numbers in Twitter earlier, but that's okay. As long as we get them right now, that's all that matters. So anyway, let's do episode number 254. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
All right, so this is the short topic program where we discuss news and events and things and happenings in the amateur radio and open source world and the part of those worlds that combine together to create Linux in the Ham Shack on the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the intertubes. So I guess we'll just dive right in and hit our first amateur radio topic. And hope this doesn't sound too much like a sales pitch. It's not intended to be one, but I thought I would mention it because we have talked about 6 meters before. And the ARRL posted a story about a new book for antennas on the Magic Band. It's for amateur radios who wanted to discover the mysteries of the Magic Band. 6 meters is a band full of surprises, and when you least expect it, 6 meters can suddenly open for contacts over hundreds and even thousands of miles. And while the HF bands may be suffering during the solar minimum, 6 meters is unaffected and just as amazing as ever, sir. You know, they're really like trying to push this book, I guess. if you're looking for pursuits in amateur radio, the world above 50 megahertz is territory you should explore. The book includes insights into the unpredictable behavior of the 6 meter band, quirks of 6 meter propagation, and how-tos on building your own 6 meter antennas with detailed designs for everything from simple antennas to high gain band busters. Yeah.
Boom, baby.
Yeah, boom. Drop it like it's hot.
That's right. Somebody was, it's so magical.
Somebody was really had time to work on this copy. But anyway,
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I mean, the ARRL is a publishing company, so they're all into self-promoting their books. And, you know, we just talked about the antenna book and the handbook a couple weeks ago. So this is no surprise. It's another good book from them. But I don't know if you need a whole book on 6 meters. Pretty much if the band's open, it's going to be open. You can work with half a watt and a wire.
Yeah, but so, can't you say that about any band, really? I mean...
No, not really. 6 meters is just one of those things that's really weird. When it opens up, it's like wide open and really, really odd propagation. Yeah. The only time you really need like a lot of gain is for marginal conditions. And if you're doing like meteor scatter and stuff like that, if you want to direct your signal a little bit better. But I found even like a simple Moxon, a two element Moxon beam that you can build yourself out of some copper pipe or some aluminum. Is more than enough gain for those circumstances, you know, unless you want to be like the loudest loud signal on the band, because they all sound loud when the band's open.
All right. Well, there you go. And I think if I remember right, the book was about $20. So it's not going to break your wallet or anything if you want to buy that. Or you could just, you know, put up a short 6 meter antenna, because I mean, quarter wave on 6 meter, not very long. And
And since the ease season is over with pretty much, you know, it's a good time to read out the band because it's not going to be open as much now.
Very good. All right. So we'll hit our next topic and we'll let Bill handle our next topic.
Sure. ARRS, plan considered for NASA Deep Space Gateway. This is another story from the ARRL. We're probably taking it all from their news, their radio news program. But anyway, this is delegates were pleased to learn last week that an ARRS plan is under consideration by NASA's Deep Space Gateway, DSG program. The Deep Space Gateway would be a small outpost orbiting the moon that would act as a spaceport for human and robotic exploration to the moon and beyond, NASA has said. crewed by 4 people, it would provide an operational platform further exploring the lunar surface and hub to a deeper space destinations, or to deeper space destinations. NASA hopes to have a completed gateway in a lunar orbit as early as 2024. During international sessions, ARIS delegates and team members from around the world presented and listened to talks on all aspects of ARIS, from operations to education to hardware to future projects. The team heard the latest news on Ham TV, the interoperable radio system, and proposed AstroBee activities, Ham TV 2, and Radio Pi projects. AstroBee is a robot that will fly around the ISS with the astronauts to help scientists and engineers develop and test technologies for use in zero gravity. I thought that's what we're doing over in the ISS already. Anyway, I guess we need another place to do it. 8 astronauts with routine chores and offer Houston flight controllers additional eyes and ears on the spacecraft. ARIS is the only non-commercial entity considered for the project. And again, that comes from the ARRL.
That sounds interesting. We're hearing a lot about the moon lately. It's suddenly coming back into focus, you know, after almost, well, over 50 years, actually. So it's interesting that the moon is becoming popular again. We're doing things other than just maintaining our tides. Okay.
Yeah, so it seems to be popping in our news pattern quite a bit, too. You know, with capturing SSTV from the moon station to... capturing the telemetry beacons from those satellites that are over there now.
Yep. All right. Very cool.
And moon bounce.
And moon bounce. Ooh. Yes, we do talk about EME every once in a while. All right. So you want to read a story? Okay. Well, the next one can be yours.
All righty then.
If the price is right.
If the price is right. Yeah, the price is never right. But anyway, LEDs can affect radio communications. Dutch Amateur Radio Society, Veron, reports that current EMC standard, developed in the last century, no longer suffices. Online newspapers such as Telegraph, NOS, and NU.NL carry articles about LED lighting that emits too much EMR. The faulty LED lights disrupt wireless connections in and around the house. Radio Communications Agency therefore starts an investigation into 50 LED lamp suppliers. Do only LED bulbs disturb? No, definitely not. The culprit is often the circuit in the LED lamp to make the supply voltage suitable for the LED. Solar panel installations also regularly cause disturbances in the frequency spectrum, especially if they're equipped with so-called optimizers. The current EMC standard was developed in the 70s. Rapid advancement in electrical technology make it seriously outdated. The IARU is in consultation with various international bodies and various working groups to establish new standards. And this information came from the Southgate ARC.
Yep, there you go. LED is brand newfangled technology that is interfering with the radio spectrum, which, of course, it would, because all light and radio waves and every other kind of wave are all part of the radio spectrum, just in different frequencies. And where those frequencies overlap, we get problems. So, you know, new standards on the way. This was a Dutch story, but I'm sure it's affecting things worldwide. So we'll see new standards, I'm sure, come out. And they're encouraging everyone to use LED lighting now, too, because it's so much more cost-effective and energy-saving. So definitely going to be a topic going forward.
Have you tried to buy a standard light bulb lately? Not happening.
You know, I thought like 3 or 4 years ago that they were just going to roll up the sidewalks on incandescent light bulbs, but you can still get them.
Yeah, but it's hard. It's not...
No, so. but you still can. Maybe they're just clearing out the shelves. I don't know.
Well, I thought they were going to completely phase them out by like 2018 or 2020 or something like that.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah,
but obviously that hasn't happened yet.
But we're not
to 2020. That's yet, true. So. But we'll see. All right. So moving on, we're going to hit some open source topics, and the first one is one that's everywhere on the internet and on the radio and on the TV. So if you haven't heard about this story, I would be shocked. But it's $34 billion Red Hat acquisition may save IBM. This one actually came from TechCrunch. And like I said, there's a billion stories out there. But I chose to go with a technical source as opposed to a business source or just a regular news outlet. So this one hopefully has a more technical angle. Though the acquisition of Red Hat is by no means a guaranteed victory for the computing company that has had more downs than ups over the last 5 years, it seems to be a better bet than an artificial intelligence program that was always more hype than reality. Watson has not performed as well as IBM had hoped, and investors were losing their patience. Watson is only one of the segments that IBM had been hoping to tap for its future growth. And while it was a huge investment area for the company always had its eyes partly fixed on the cloud computing environment as it looked for areas of growth. It's this area of cloud computing where IBM hopes that Red Hat can help it gain ground. Quote, the acquisition of Red Hat is a game changer. It changes everything about the cloud market, said Ginni Rometty, IBM chairman, president, and chief executive officer. And as Red Hat chief executive Jim Whitehurst told The Street in September, quote, the big secular driver of Linux is that big data workloads run on Linux. AI workloads run on Linux. DevOps and those platforms almost exclusively Linux. So much of the net new workloads that are being built have an affinity for Linux. So there you go. Story came from TechCrunch. And like I said, if you hadn't already heard that story, I'd be surprised, but you've just heard it again.
Linux, 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 Linux.
That's right.
Oh, lots of Linux in there. Yeah. I mean, IBM has been, having some issues. I know, I have a friend that, is still hanging in there. They've had quite a few, layoffs and stuff like that over the last, 5 years or so. So that's what they're talking about, the more downs than ups.
Yep.
So, I mean, I hope this is, not a way to devalue Red Hat at some point. But we shall see. This is one of these deals that, the whole Novell and Suzy thing didn't work out quite well either. So we'll wait and see on this one.
Yeah, I guess so. I at least in the open source world, or when it comes to GPL software and the idea of copylefting, the fact that, this acquisition has taken place really shouldn't affect anyone unless they're just fully invested in Red Hat, specifically the enterprise version. For the rest of us, there's Scientific Linux and CentOS and all the other derivatives, and so we'll still be able to use Red Hat in the way it was intended. I don't know if the upstream from IBM will come downstream like it has up till now. I guess we'll have to wait and see on that. But
that's doubtful. I mean, IBM has really never gotten their own distro off the ground, and no traction whatsoever. And primarily this is all about the cloud computing component. It's something that Red Hat's doing successfully, and IBM has tried to do, and really hasn't gained ground there either. I guess they run out of time on their Watson commercials.
Yeah. Watson has kind of run its course. I don't know if anything's ever going to come of that other than what it already does, like beat people at Jeopardy and, do speech, text-to-speech or speech-to-text type searching with its built-in AI. I mean, I'm sure it's doing something for somebody, but it must be in a more enterprise arena because you don't really hear about Watson anymore. So I guess we'll see what happens. What becomes of IBM now that they've taken over another huge company for a huge amount of dollars? So. Alrighty. So we're going to move on to another, not exactly a tech giant, but a much more interesting tech company. We'll let Bill tell you all about System 76.
Yeah, System 76 shares open hardware. Thelio. You can pronounce it however you wish. Computer details. System 76 has been making big news in the Linux community lately with its upcoming open source
Helio
computer.
Something like that. Yeah.
Helio. Many Linux users have been clamoring for System 76 to make its own hardware. Because that's going to really go long. And that dream will soon be a reality. Probably the most exciting element of the new system is the promise of an open source daughter board that will strip the proprietary aspects from a typical motherboard. The company says we will be unveiling Thelio systems on Thursday, November 1st, so it's right around the corner. From there, you'll be able to customize your own Thelio desktops for pre-order. System 76 shared teaser images of the computer. It apparently uses DDR4 memory, which is to be expected. SATA. SSD, probably NVMe. Well, if it's NVMe, it's not SATA. So anyway, this is a terrible news source. And a design that is simple, elegant, and easy to manage. And that comes from Beta News. So, yeah, don't take whatever they say for anything. Obviously not quoted from the company. That's two different technologies there. They're both solid state drives, but totally different architecture.
No, see, I think the it actually makes sense the way it's written there. You changed the word probably to possibly. So I think they're saying it's a SATA SSD, but it might not be SATA SSD. It might be NVMe, which...
Oh,
I think that's the way they intended that. Hopefully Beta News, which we have gotten articles from before, is not super stupid.
Well, I just think this is a bad idea. This is not a good idea for System 76. I don't think the market is that critical of of having a completely open source computer.
What do you mean that critical?
Well, I don't think there's enough marked there to make that its only determining seller. You know, it just seems, you know, unless there's a, you know, huge performance advantage to gain from having a fully open source machine, if it's only to just say that it is open source, I don't think it's enough of a draw for it to be a big drawer to that product. I don't know. It seems like a great idea and all, but I mean, hardware is something that people generally don't even think about anymore.
I think in the case of System 76, people might just be interested in the name System 76 more than the fact that it's open source. But
yeah, maybe. I don't know.
They have their advocates and their zealots for sure, just like anything. So
yeah.
All right. Do you want to do the next one or do you want me to do it? Thank you. I can do it. All right. So moving on in our open source topics, we have one more, and that is the 10 most used programming languages in open source. 20 years after the open source movement began, developers are increasingly contributing to projects in the space. Of 4,300 developers surveyed for a DigitalOcean report, 55% said they are contributing to open source projects. However, 71% said that their companies expect them to use open source software as part of their day-to-day development work. For the developers who do participate in open source projects, 60% contribute to the software side, followed by 16% in software maintenance, and 14% in filing issues. I had to read that a couple of times because I thought there was like a market in filing issues. But I have a feeling that means they're filing like bug reports.
Yeah.
The top motivation for this participation is improving coding skills along with being part of a community and learning new technologies. The 10 programming languages developers said they use most for their projects are, in first place, boo, JavaScript, 62%.
Making bloated web pages daily.
That's right. In second place, Python at 52%. Third place, PHP at 29%, followed by Java at 28%, CSS at 25%. I don't really consider CSS a programming language, but okay. C++ at 18%.
It's quite powerful.
It is. But it usually doesn't stand alone.
Not generally.
Yeah. Go at 16%, C at 14%, C sharp at 10%, and down at the very bottom, Ruby at 9%. This list largely mirrors other data on the most popular programming languages to learn in general. And that source was Tech Republic actually quoting from a DigitalOcean report. So
I'm missing SQL on here. There's no SQL.
Again, I guess it is a programming language, but again, it's a very specific application in SQL.
Yeah, it's like the database that sits behind every single one of those apps, languages.
Well, like CSS, I guess didn't consider it a programming language. And again, I'm not sure I would consider CSS a programming language either. I would consider it more of a data structure almost, because it's almost like JSON or XML. I mean, because it sort of has defining characteristics. It doesn't actually do anything that I'm aware of, unless there's something about CSS that I don't know.
No, I mean, you could do all kinds of animations and everything else in CSS nowadays. I mean, it's pretty powerful.
Okay, but isn't that a function of the renderer, not the CSS itself?
Well, I mean, if you don't program it, it won't render it.
Okay, fair enough. All right, well, somebody who's got a better handle on the psychology of programming can explain to me how CSS is more of a programming language than I think it is. But anyway, that's just me. That's my shortcoming, not CSS's, I guess. All right. So anyway, let's move on to Linux in the Ham Shack. We do have a few projects. We have a few stories here we can talk about. The first one is a flash topic, and that is something I actually got off the Ubuntu Hams mailing list, but it's also referenced on the KLog site, and that is that KLog 0.9.5 has been released, and it brings two new interesting features, statistics of your log and satellite data updates. The ability to update satellite data when there are new satellites in the sky or an error in the current data set can be done on the fly, and also included are query optimizations, bug fixes, new translations into French and German, and updated translations for several other languages. So if you use KLog, here you go. Updates.
Yeah, and Cubicle Nate was mentioning in the chat room that GNOME uses CSS. I think we were just talking about that today, weren't we?
But isn't it used for styling GNOME?
And everything else. So it's actually used for some interpretation, like interpretive languaging.
All right, cool. I'll think about it again. It seemed like in that list of programming languages, CSS was slightly out of place.
Yeah, I agree in general.
Yeah, in the sense that if CSS is in there, SQL should probably be in there.
Well, if you get into like procedural language, SQL, then yeah, I mean, truly, I just went through 200,000 lines of transactional SQL statements. So I know there's a lot of programming that you can do inside a SQL that you probably shouldn't do.
Things it wasn't truly designed for, but can do if you push it hard enough.
Absolutely. It's just like Excel, you know, it'll just do anything you keep asking it to do until one day it keels over and dies.
All right. Anyway, so the next couple of stories here, you actually dumped into the Etherpad, so we'll let you cover them.
Yeah, I did some GitHub and GitLab diving, and I do have to mention again that GitLab, it's just really got to fix the whole searching capabilities and sorting and stuff like that. It's quite painful, and I do have to say that there's not a lot of penetration of amateur radio projects that I can find. I only found about 27 projects in total on GitLab. So unless people just have them configured in a way in which they're not really searchable, I'm not sure that the whole, you know, oh, we're leaving GitHub for GitLab thing is really that true to form. Anyway, I did find a few projects here that have been updated recently. First one is a receive weather satellite images. Now, this is one of those things that's not really a program, but rather a guide and a list of information, and Matthew Kenny provides basically right now it's a README and a bunch of other little things, a site that is a collection of notes on receiving weather satellite images using amateur radio hardware and software. And like I say here, it's basically a collection of links, tools, and tutorials on getting started on actually doing this. So it looks pretty interesting. There's a lot of links there to, you know, SDR applications and stuff like that. If you haven't really messed around with doing that, you know, it's definitely a good resource to kind of bring everything together, including some links to some YouTube videos that can help you get started. And it looks like he'll eventually store some scripts and stuff like there, probably for configuration and whatnot. So yeah, check that out. That's on GitHub. The next one here is HamGrid. This is by Ethan Zimmerman. He brings us an experiment with the Maidenhead grid system used by amateur radio operators. And of course, that's your four character, like mine's DN55, and then if you're six character, it's, you know, mine's DN55QT. Basically, a start to an overlaid Google map with grid squares that, as you zoom into your location, it gives you the six character locator. It also has a geolocator, so if you allow the permissions when you browse to their little demo site, it'll find your grid square and pin it. It didn't zoom and like recenter the map, so there's definitely some work to do there, but this is an early development demo site. It works, so it's something to check out if you're interested in that kind of project. Take a look at it. The last one here, that last one, that was on GitHub. This last one, actually, I did find on GitLab, and it is RSDK, a C++ and Qt-based HPSDR, software-defined radio project. And this comes to us from KF5. Oscar Victor Kip Aldrich. He created this as an experiment to learn Qt. Or cute, and it looks pretty neat. It's a software-defined radio app, like I said, for Linux, but it obviously could go cross-platform, I believe. Let me look at that before I say that. definitely for Linux. So we'll just stick it with that, Linux. And a couple of the things that stuck out here was It lays out the radio controls in the form of a dockable, closable, independently positionable widgets and allows customized radio layouts. So it's a kind of got cool little flow for an SDR app. I don't really care about style sheets, and does use a modified version of the DTSP digital signal processing library as a backend for radio signal processing. So that's quite powerful. And the thing that I really saw was this, that our SDK uses the Jack Audio connection kit for low latency local audio. So that's for audio routing. There you go, a native app for Jack. So get your Jack running, and you can try this out if you have an HP SDR. And I think, I'm not sure the full hardware compatibility list. I was just looking. Hardware lineup, it looks like... I don't really see. This all goes with the HP SDR, so the High Performance Software Defined Radio. So that's a collection of open source hardware components consisting of receivers, exciters, interfaces, and so on and so forth. And you can search that up as well if you're interested in that, or you probably already have that if you know what that means. And you can check this project out. It looks pretty slick.
All right, very cool. I wanted to dig up. I got an email, I think. I'm not sure how I found this, but there was a web-based logger that I somehow found out about, and I was digging around because I wanted to include it in here, and I found the link to the site, and the site is logs.aha.com. Let's see. .net, sorry, logs. It's logs.alphahotel-hotel-uniformhotel.net. And I don't know where this is hosted, but its native language is not English. Its native language looks like Japanese, perhaps.
What did you say it was? Logs dot what?
It's logs.alphahotel-hotel-uniformhotel.net. Yeah, exactly.
Translate this page.
No, it has a translation drop down in the upper right.
It says Japanese.
Select, yeah. So you can select English and it will be in English, more or less. It does have a valid SSL certificate, so I did actually create a login with a password only for this site. And it does what it says. It's a logger. You can import your logs into it, and it's got a reasonably good Web 2.0 interface. And so it's a project out there. I really don't know a whole lot about it. I can't even find the information on where I found the site at this point. But it is a web-based cloud logger, apparently hosted somewhere in Japan. It does have some internationalization, and I wanted to put it out there in case anyone wants to explore it. I'm going to do a little bit more exploring of it and probably talk again about it, maybe in episode number 257 when we come back around to short topics. So I just wanted to put it in there and make sure everyone knows it's available. To do what?
I was just looking, and I see they have a GitHub repo, but it just has a lang file in there. I thought I had found it. It's like, oh, it's open. Oh, it's not quite open source.
Yeah. So use it with caution if you want to check it out. But I'm definitely going to do some more investigation into it. I just wanted to make sure the information was out there before we moved on, because at least this way I won't forget it. All right. So that actually exhausts all of our topics for the evening, which means we have come down to the bottom of episode number 254. And at the end of our short topic shows, we do the social media roundup. So that means we'll bring Cheryl back from La La Land, wherever she's been.
Working on stuff.
And you can handle the social media roundup.
All right. I'll do my best.
Okay.
Okay. So for this time in our Patreons list, we have Andy Webster, which is new, William Heckelman, Cubicle Nate, John Spriggs, Steve Sainer, Donald Gever, Robert Pitts, Paul Griffith, Jonas Rulo, Samuel Vimes, Steve Metcalf, Chris Beggio, and Darren King. Our subscriptions list includes James Lewis, Steve Hepler, Jeff Zimmerman, Michael Jopling, Steve Nichols, Todd Bowers, Thor Wiegman, Stephen Harp, Charlie Brown, Kevin Murray, Wayne Carpenter, Doug Redder, Bill Piotr, Dylan Engel, Alan Wilson, John Clark, Robert Halliday, Brian Smith, Johnny Kinsey, Ronald Icke, Robert Yerke, Michael Conley, and Jeremy Hall. On Facebook, we have Tom Moore, Aaron Dalton, and Michael Boudreau. Nobody joined us on Google Plus this time. And for Twitter, we have at AD0DX, at Don Gibbs 2, at J603, at StanRoy71, at BGibson88, at HP Garcia, at KG7UOZ, at CD314SP, at Twizzit2, at DriverDevil, at W6HN, at CT1DOV, and at SatNOGS. YouTube, we have Alan Goer, David McKay, Scott Nichols, Eric Johansson, and Felix RZ, and nobody on the mailing list and no merchandise.
All right, so there we go. We have made it down to the bottom of the Etherpad, which means the show is just about to wrap up. But we did want to mention the folks who had joined us in the chat room tonight. We had several with us tonight, actually. We have VK6EK from Down Under. We have AB10, I think I stuck doing zeros too. AB1OP, Cubicle Nate, KC0NUK, KB0OWD, Jay Lindsay, and I don't think KB9ZMY was in there tonight. I think you must have had something else.
He's on the drive home. He's on the drive home. So he's on the drive listening. Home. He's just not texting because I guess he has classes on Monday nights.
All right, there you go. So thanks everybody for tuning in to episode number 254 of Linux in the Ham Shack. I'm pretty sure I got the episode number right that time. And we will catch you all again for the next edition of The Weekender, which will be episode number 255. So make sure you tune in for that. So for Linux in the Ham Shack, this is Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Our website is located at lhspodcast.info. You can support the program by visiting the LHS Patreon page of patreon.com/LHSpodcast or using the contribute link on the website. Get in touch via social media. The show has a presence on Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Discord, and YouTube. Or you can drop an email to info@lhspodcast.info or record a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. Visit the IRC channel, LHS Podcast, on the Freenode IRC network. Also visit the online merchandise store at shop.lhspodcast.info for fun and fashionable LHS merchandise. Become an ambassador and represent LHS at a Linux convention or hamfest. Email ambassadors@lhspodcast.info or visit the website for details. The podcast is recorded live every Monday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Connect to the stream at stream.blacksparrowmedia.net/8008/LHS live. Until next time, over and out. Linux in the Ham Shack and the Linux in the Ham Shack logo are released under a Creative Commons Attribute Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License.